Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Hutchcroft, photographer, copywriter, and educational content creator. Join me while I sit down with talented photographers, savvy entrepreneurs, and inspiring educators from the Unscripted community. Each week, I pick their brains and invite them to share real-life advice so you can learn everything you need to know to grow your dream business. Tune in for conversations about harnessing your creativity, connecting to your clients, building your confidence as a photographer, and so much more. No matter where you are on your photography journey, this is the podcast for you. If you want to celebrate all stories, take photos that matter, and feel empowered in your craft, don't go anywhere. Let's get right into it. Christian O'Reilly is the founder and creative brains behind Fire and Ice, an award-winning UK-based photography and cinema production company specializing in weddings, elopements, and now so much more. Capturing over 100 weddings per year, Christian is an insatiable and voracious photographer and businessman. Just when he feels like he's made it, he does something else to push himself out of his comfort zone. In this episode, we talk about some of the things he's lived through that have challenged him, tested him, and made him who he is. You'll never believe what they are. If you want to learn more about how to turn your setbacks into strengths, this is the episode for you. Let's get to it. Christian, would you mind just introducing yourself to our audience?
Hi, my name is Christian John O'Reilly. I am owner of a company called Fire and Ice, which is a wedding photography and videography company based out of UK.
Awesome. Where did you learn photography?
In prison.
Let's just get right into it.
Yeah, let's just dive into that. I mean, I learned the theory in prison. Obviously, you cannot have cameras in prison. So no practical, unfortunately. But the theory side of it, yeah, I read a lot of books.
What was the book that kind of really hooked you?
It was The Art of Photography. I think it was by Bruce. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Barnbaum or something. Barnbaum, his name. The Art of Photography is like an approach to personal expression. My dad used to send them in to me when I was incarcerated in prison. And I fell in love. I mean, before that, we had my dad was into photography. I wasn't as much. I was a child. But we had a dark room in the attic. And I used to be up there. I used to remember. It's like a core memory of me developing images in the attic. So he's kind of pushed it on me, but I didn't have anything else to read. So I'm like, Dad, send me a book. And he sent me a photography book. And that's how I started.
Did he just know that you would be good at it?
I don't know. That's a tough question to answer. I mean, he just I think, you know, when you're dad, I mean, I'm dad of five children. And if I enjoy something, say if my son wanted to learn about something, I would kind of push my passion onto him to see if he clicks on, because I'd be able to bond with him in a certain subject, I guess.
So yeah.
Maybe he was hopeful, but I don't know if he knew I was going to be good. I don't even know if I am good.
Oh, come on. Don't give me that humble pie. No way. So I guess kind of looping back to the bomb you just dropped about 2 seconds ago, being in jail would have been, not the easiest thing in the world. And then coming across a book that, I don't know, maybe linked you to something comfortable, to your dad, to being in this, it sounds quite idyllic, having a dark room in your attic. There's something quite just magical and kind of quaint about that. Was there something about this escapism of kind of moving yourself out of this shitty situation that you were in and being able to immerse yourself and really dive into something that you felt this sort of burgeoning passion for?
Yeah. I mean, where do we start? I mean, prison in itself, I actually miss prison. I really miss jail. And that sounds crazy. But what I loved about it was the structure that was forced upon me. There's no temptations. It's just you either make good of a bad situation. And that's exactly what I did in more ways than one. I learned a new language. I got in shape. I learned photography in terms of theory. I was terrible when I come out. Don't get me wrong. Reading a book is not going to help you. You need to do the practical side of things. But I kind of fell in love. But what you mentioned there, I've actually never thought about it from that perspective before, which was I was kind of connected somehow to the outside world, which was my dad, and it kind of, I guess it made me feel closer to my family, which were the only ones that stayed with me through, this adversity, through this tough time. So it kind of like, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, it could have been anything. I think if my dad sent me, you know, an aeronautical engineering book, I probably would have come out and tried to get a job at NASA or something. But, you know, I think it goes back to those roots with those core memories when I was developing photos with my dad in the attic. And then he sent it kind of was a, I guess it was an escape for me. And it did make me feel closer to him.
Mm.
Damn, my dad's listening right now. I love you, Dad.
I love your dad too. He sounds like an angel. I feel like I can totally relate to that. Like, I mean, I've never been to jail, but I feel like during lockdown, when there were so few options available to me, there was this kind of peace of just like, okay, like this is what's in front of me. And this is kind of, yeah, I can either like descend into, you know, like existential crises and whatever, or I can just like get really good at making sourdough.
Yeah, that's it. You know, actually talking about COVID is the same. It's very similar. It's a good point to bring up because I remember actually making a post because it felt like that again, but it did have a lot more temptations than prison. But it felt back to that moment. But the difference this time during COVID was I was completely burned out and I just wanted a break. I had the children, the family, you know, everything was going on. So I didn't kind of, you know, I was just concentrating on being present at home with my, you know, with my family. But it was a lot going on in the 2 years previous to that with like the launch of the business. It kind of skyrocketed. And when COVID hit, it was like, Jesus, I needed this break.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. I think a lot of people have such different experiences. Like I have like, you know, like my friends who are like single and in Melbourne, which is like a city that had like the most like hectic lockdown, I think, like in the world. Maybe there's like one other city that was like just as bad. But like they're like, I haven't had human touch in like months. And then I also like felt like I was at the shops one day and I heard this mom like talking to the person across from the like at the counter being like, I haven't had a moment to myself in months. And she's like, I just go to the bathroom and just stay there.
Oh. Like,
and then like her daughter was like hanging on to her dress, just being like, oh, that's why you're in the bathroom for so long.
Do you know, you don't realize, I mean, prison, right? People say to me, what was it like getting out after doing such a long time? I mean, I'm not talking about, I didn't do life in prison. You know, I didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, let's be clear about that. Like, I also feel like this is important to clarify before we move on. That like, Christian didn't, like, obviously, like, you did something that was, like, bad enough to land you in prison. But, like, I was looking at the charges and I was like, you know, it's not that bad.
I mean, depending where you are in the world, you know, it's legal in some countries.
Totally.
But here, you know, I mean, for the listeners, let's just get it out there. I was caught with, I think it was close to £2 million worth of cannabis in the UK, which was a Class B drug at the time. So I had a 6-year sentence and I served 28 months in total, which is about 2.5 years actually inside. And then you're obviously out on license for the rest of the time. And if, you know, if you get back in trouble, you have to do the rest of your sentence plus the new sentence, which is what a license is called. So I had to be a good boy when I got out, and I was a good boy. I became a photographer. But people always say to me, going back to what I was talking about, people say to me, what's it like getting out, you know, after spending, you know, 28 months is a long time in a 6x4 cell. And the things I remember specifically was like my sight, my eyesight was really bad because I never seen distance anymore.
Whoa.
Like you only see walls, you don't see far. So it affects your sight, your vision. And then another one was opening doors. I walk up to a door when I got out and I just stopped because for 2.5 years, you can't touch the doors. You never open the doors. So I just stopped by doors and then people would open the door for me and they'd probably think, who's this self-entitled freaking asshole?
Yeah. And like, they probably think you're really fancy. Like, it's like, you're so like, rich and like posh that like you've never touched a door, but really it's because you've been in prison.
Yeah. So I couldn't see and I kept walking into doors basically. And they both weren't related.
Wow. I had never thought about that. Just like your vision and like your scope of like your field. Like, and like as a photographer as well, like it's so funny that like you couldn't really see and then you come out and then you're like, I'm going to be a photographer.
My eyesight's terrible. It's probably the worst for a photographer because of, and I totally blame prison. And yeah.
It hasn't recovered.
No, I never did. Long vision, like, is bad. I mean, close up, I can see a lot. But, I mean, if you think about it, I was in, you know, there's just walls everywhere. You can't see far. You're like, you can look up at the sky, but that's all you see. You don't see any mountains, nothing, no buildings, nothing, because the walls are so high. So, yeah, it really does affect your vision.
That feels like a really big deal. Like, I feel like...
Yeah, why are not many people talking about this?
Why doesn't anyone talk about this? Like, that shouldn't be, like, part of the punishment. Like, no matter your crime, like, shouldn't basically diminish, severely impair, like, someone's senses. That's so wild.
The start a petition.
I will sign it.
We need to lower the walls in prison so you can see when you get out.
I don't know. Yeah, no, what is, like,
you got 1,800 like a, people.
Yeah, wanting to get out. It's easier to climb
over the 4-foot wall.
At least everyone can see.
Yeah.
So this sounds like a massive kind of pivotal experience in your life. Do you look at it like that, where it was like the Christian before he went to prison and then the Christian after he went to prison? Or do you kind of just see it as part of the whole?
It completely made me who I am today. This is one of the reasons, well, the reason why I do not regret what I did. Obviously, you know, I was naughty and, you know, and I do... look back at that situation. I kind of hate that a lot about that person. But if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't be who I am now. And I genuinely believe that. It's really helped me with my confidence. And it sounds strange because, you know, you go to prison, how does it help your confidence? It's because I've been through so much. Like, nothing phases me anymore. And I'll give you a good example with this. One of my... the manager of my company, I don't manage my company anymore. You know, I just go and I shoot and I do it because I have a big family. And so I go, I shoot, I direct. And then I have a manager called Josh who kind of runs the entire business, right? When it comes to all the employees and, you know, the locations, everything, basically tells me where to go. It's a perfect example of why I don't regret it and why it's made me who I am today. He's from a Jehovah's Witness background, and he kind of had an upbringing which is like completely opposite to mine. His parents were very more strict. It was a lot. I'm not going to go into his actual personal life, but looking at Josh and going on shoots with Josh, there's certain things that do not faze me. For example, we recently had a wedding in Jamaica, and we shot a wedding in Jamaica, and we got stuck there because my passport... basically, my Esther had, I had a new passport, but my Esther was registered to my old passport. So when I got there, I had a flight for the States, they actually stopped me. So we were stuck in Jamaica now, right? We couldn't get home. And to me, this like, I mean, come on, we're in the Caribbean, who cares? Like, but to him, it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know, all of these things that go through his head. And for me, it's like my character has gone through so much that nothing phases me. Nothing phases me. And I see him stressing over things. I'm like, bro, just calm down. Everything's going to be fine. We're not in prison. It cannot get worse. It can get worse. I mean, but like, just calm down. Just like, just things are going to be fine. And that's how it's made me to now, even like something as simple as shooting, you know, somewhere. And say I jump over a wall. Right. Say I jump over the wall and he's like, no, we can't go over the wall to shoot there. I'm like, shut up. Let's go. Come on. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, breaking rules, not laws, is why I've got to where I am so fast. It's by, you know, obviously not breaking the law because I'll end up back incarcerated, but bending the rules and having the character to be able to just say, you know, it's fine. It's fine. And that stems from prison. It stems from all of the hardships of my life and the biggest one being prison.
Yeah, I get that. I feel like it kind of, it's like you now know the depth of your strength and like your capacity to like overcome certain challenges and stuff. And so I feel like it's kind of now that you've kind of been through this crazy thing, it's almost you have this perspective of being like, well, yeah, if we're stuck in Jamaica for a couple of days, like.
It's not probably like, wasn't the best example, right? But there's been other
I
examples
feel
of
so like, bad for you, by the way. Like, it sounds like torture.
But that's what I'm saying is the character. I mean, to him, it's like, oh my God, we're stuck. When's the next flight? When are we going to get out? All of this other thing is going through his head. And I'm like, bro, we're in the Caribbean. Calm down.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, other things of, you know, for example, I'll give you another one. We were shooting in kind of an abandoned building, right? Now, you know, it has don't trespass kind of signs and all of this. And the closer and closer we got to the building, the more and more stressed he got. And I'm like, bro, just calm down, man. Just calm down. Like, it's fine. And he's like, stressed. But now he's going through a lot with me. And he's building character. He's going through hardships. He's going through tough times. And I'm kind of, you know, bringing that side out of him. And I'm seeing him, you know, just not give a shit as much anymore. It's just really important.
Yeah, totally. And I imagine even just like, you know, on a really micro level, like shooting at a wedding when things don't exactly go to plan and you kind of have to stay calm despite like all these unpredictable variables. And you're just like, well, I'm kind of comfortable with the discomfort now. So exactly. Let's just do this.
I need it. I need it. I need to be in that discomfort. It actually pushes me. You know, I need that pressure.
Is that why you kind of went from shooting weddings to doing video and to hiring all these, like, it's like growth and like edging beyond your comfort zone seems very much like a theme of what drives you.
Have you ever seen that reel? It was like, you know, I don't want peace. I want problems. That's my life. You want to have a child? I'll take 5. You know, you want to build a photography business? Let's get 15 employees and do it on a global scale and shoot 3 weddings on 3 different continents in one day. Let's do that.
Do you just have to put all of your coping mechanisms to the test at all times?
If I swear, if nothing chaos is going on in my life, there's something wrong. And I'm like, it kind of stresses me out. I'm like, why is this so quiet? Something's coming.
You're made for the job.
Yeah, built for this.
Do you remember the first wedding you ever shot?
I do. It was my sister's wedding, actually. Yeah, I bought a camera, Nikon D7000, actually. It was like a $700 camera. With dollars, you're American? Oh, you're Australian, right?
Yeah, but it's, where I feel like US dollars, or
it was a lot at the time. I just got
it was
out of
a
prison.
Lot of money. Yeah,
I just got out of jail, man. I had no money, I had no backup, nothing. And I bought this camera and I went to my sister's wedding. I actually reached out to her photographer and said, hey, you know, do you mind if I come along and like shoot stuff in the background? I won't get in your way, blah, blah, blah. And at this time, I remember in thinking back to that now, I was like such a new guy. And, you know, I was probably annoying a wedding photographer, but she was cool. And I was like in the background, you know, I didn't overstep. You know, once you've been in the game and the photography industry and all of these groups and apps, and you kind of see the amount of photographers, she was probably bitching about me in another group somewhere. Like, oh, this is the brother of the bride brought his camera, called me Uncle Bob and stuff. But I took the camera.
There's always one.
So I was that guy. I took the camera. I took some photos during the wedding, and mostly of my daughter, who was the flower girl. And I think when I posted them on Facebook, they're actually still there now. I think it was like 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago. And those photos, like the people that were commenting on these photos are not good, right? They're just snapshots of a shooting auto. And the feedback I had, you know, it was like, oh my God, these photos are incredible. I kind of fed off that. And I was like, wow, you know, this is something here. I really enjoyed it. Let's do this again. And I kind of needed to go out and shoot again, post online and just see the response. And like, I was like blown away by everyone who's so nice. And they were probably just, you know, just being nice because the photos weren't incredible. I was brand new to this, even though I read books. I was brand new to the practical side of it. So then I pursued it and I was like, all right. And this is, I mean, if you search my name or if anybody knows the company, you probably would have seen me over the past 5-6 years continuously posting in groups, Unscripted group, you know, Looks Like Film was a big one, my own group, which we made. And I kind of like, I kept going with that. I kind of made a competition with myself of how I could get so much reaction from people. And then not just why I'm getting that reaction, sometimes when I'm post, why I'm not getting that reaction and how can I improve that? And that's literally how I got better at photography, by just looking at responses, actually taking constructive criticism from people in groups who were better than me, who were more knowledgeable, thinking about why people are responding in certain ways to this photo. Why are they looking at this and feeling the need to go on there and comment when, you know, they know nothing about this? And how can I do this and make a bigger reaction? And that's literally how I dissected every photo of mine and got better the next time and kept going.
How do you filter the responses? Like, obviously, it's so subjective whether someone likes a photo or not. And so I feel like for me, like that's kind of a dangerous game to play almost, of like looking to the outside to like deliver some kind of feedback. But it is like so helpful when you can like really listen to constructive criticism and like take that on board and like understand it. But like, what's the sort of internal like alchemy or like sifting process that happens when you hear or see these responses? It's almost like you need to be open, but you can't be too open. Otherwise, you can feel really dejected or like discouraged. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you take ego out of it, you can actually, whenever you post something, you can tell which ones are correct and what they're saying. If you look past your own mind and your own, like, this is my own thing, you can tell, and you can actually look at it and look at the comment, look at your photo and go, do you know what? That's right. And how do I improve that? I see this in photography groups a lot, right? When, especially when there's a super popular photographer, they constantly get thousands of likes. And you have to ask a question. You know, Sue Bryce, for example, you know, she's not getting so much feedback and, you know, responses and likes because she's just a really nice person. She's actually a phenomenal photographer. Mm. And she got there by her art, not by being a nice person. It just happens that she's a really nice person as well. From what I've seen, I mean, I don't know her personally, but I'm just going off for the majority of the world that looks at Sue Bryce. And so I was always asking myself, because we become quite popular in the groups, and I was asking myself, are people just liking this because they like me? That was the biggest one to get around. But this is why I used to take myself out of the places that I was known. And Looks Like Film was probably the biggest one for me. Like, if your photo blows up and Looks Like Film, you know it's a good job. They don't give a shit. They are ruthless. They will literally tell you, this photo's shit. And that's what I wanted to hear. And that's what I wanted. I wanted that truth. It mattered to me to know, not just to scratch, stroke my ego, but to know that what I'm doing is actually on the right track, is different, is unique. And this photo is speaking to people and they feel the need to comment.
Yeah. You shot your first wedding, which was your sister's, and then you kind of felt like excited about the responses and you wanted to like get a little bit more of an understanding as to like what was good and what wasn't. And so you kind of went out into the outer world a little bit more. When did you start to sort of make a name for yourself as a photographer? Like, what was the timeline between your first wedding and where you are now?
All right. So I'll give you the rundown of the business, right? So a quick rundown, because a lot happened in the last, you know, I mean, I've been a photographer for 9 years, but Fire and Ice is only, it was born on 2018, January the 1st. But going back before that, after prison, you know, I bought the camera, I opened a studio. And again, even though I read books, I knew nothing about practical. So I had all the lights, you know, I had loans, my parents helped me, you know, I had borrowed money, opened up a studio, complete disaster,
like
crashed and burned. Yeah, because I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I just jumped in. I thought I needed a studio. I needed pass in trade. So I opened it for about, I think it was 18 months. You know, I put a lot of money into it. It just didn't do it for me. I had a load of overheads. I had to make sure, you know, paying things. So I was like, right, let's strip this back. Let's just go weddings. One camera, you know, I need a camera. I need a computer. I don't need a building. I don't need heating, you know, electricity.
Yeah.
I don't need to do it. So let's just strip it back. So Fire and Ice was actually called RGB photography before.
Right? Nice.
The most cliche photography name, RGB photography. I never called my name because I always had the intentions of this was going to be bigger than just me. It was never Christian John O'Reilly Photography. It was always a name, right? Because I knew I wanted to, you know, go, I wanted to scale this massively and didn't just want to be completely fine with, you know, a couple of hundred grand a year. I wanted to scale it, millions. And look at the millions. If I do something, I want to do it the best, right? And unfortunately, I had the same attitude when I went to prison. If, you know, if I was going to be a drug dealer, I had to be the best drug dealer and import it into the bloody country. So then I applied those techniques to photography, right? If I'm going to be the photographer, I need to be the best photographer. How do I do this? So I stripped it back, started shooting weddings, had no clue about business, zero. Like, my entire workflow was a piece of paper with the bride's first name and how much money they owed me. And I was doing it so cheap, right? Like, it was like those 495 package, you know, you get full coverage photography, three albums, a parent album, my firstborn child, all of this. You know, I was just, I didn't care. I didn't care about the money, which is another reason why I don't regret what I do, because money has never driven me. It's always been passion, because I had so much money and I was always around money when I was doing illegal activities. It kind of like, I was happy not to have it now. I didn't want this money. I don't want it, but go, you know, I want this passion. I want a meaning. I want a purpose to life. And that's what photography was to me. It was a getaway from all of the past, everything I ever went for. So the studio failed, stripped it back, wedding photographer, started with just me. I was shooting weddings with my Nikon. At that point, I had a Nikon DF, phenomenal camera, by the way. The DF, right? The sensor is incredible on that thing. And I still have it right now, but I don't use it anymore because we are Sony fans. But yeah, stripped it back, weddings. And then I got a second shooter. And I was like, okay, we're starting to shoot weddings. with someone, it was more enjoyable. We could bounce ideas off him. I liked that, that team. So I was like, right, let's grow this. And I got to the point where, so RGB photography, and then something happened. I met a wonderful woman called Jacqueline Di Roma, who lived in the States. And I was actually through the photography groups, by the way, of me posting photos. So I posted a photo one day on the photography group. I think it was Meg Bitten's group. I don't know if you know that one, Meg Bitten.
I don't. But
Google that one. That's her. Oh my God.
Is it a good one?
I'm not going to say.
Okay. All right. We're moving on.
Yeah, move on. So I posted a photo. She commented something like, wow, handsome and talented. Your wife must be very lucky. Your wife is very lucky. Yeah. She knew I was single. She knew what she was doing. Like, thinking back to this, man, it's given me smiles in all these memories. I haven't thought about this much over the past, you know, year or so. So we kind of like, she was a photographer from the States. I was a photographer from the UK. I flew over there. There was a huge love story, very public love story. We joined forces. And this is the reason Fire and Ice is called Fire and Ice, is because at the time I have red hair and she has blue hair. So we posted on our Instagram, what should we call our business? And everyone was like, Fire and Ice. And it was like the Game of Thrones era as well. You know, when Game of Thrones was like, so it was like, yeah, Fire and Ice. So we went with that. And yeah, that's kind of how Fire and Ice Company was born. Obviously, before that, she was a very well-known photographer and so was I. But joining forces kind of like, it spiraled it more. We injected our personal life into the situation, into the business, and like it went, exploded, it skyrocketed, and it went too big too fast. And to be honest with you, we struggled to hold on. We held on tight. We went through everything together, everything. If you like, how we survived for 5 years is beyond me. We threw everything at there, and then you put children into the mix and the family. It was a lot.
And an international move. And yes, it's just like, that's a lot for two people to handle. It's a lot of pressure.
Yes, it was. And, you know, paying the bills, we had a lot. Bringing her into the UK, that was a massive, we had to move to Spain. It was so much going on. You throw a pregnant woman and four other children into the mix as well, plus an autistic child. It is a lot. Like, that's so a lot. Much. It was a lot. And we were shooting like 150 weddings a year. I was flying all over the world. Jackie was pregnant, you know, and we was trying to hold on to this business and trying to grow it. Everything was business and children. We had no personal life. And that's where my marriage failed, is that I didn't put in the same effort with my marriage as I did with my business or my children. Like, we failed our own marriage. We never had time for each other. We didn't go on a date. We never had a honeymoon. We just boom, straight into life, and it hit us like a ton of bricks.
Did you guys have a wedding?
We did. Yeah, we did. We got married in Orlando in a park, actually. We just hired 30 chairs, kind of an elopement style.
Nice.
Yeah, we live streamed the event. It's online somewhere.
Regardless of whether you photograph elopements, weddings, or family sessions, the juggling act that comes with running your own business can be a real struggle. There's a lot that falls on your shoulders, from marketing yourself, to managing your finances, to finding new ways to stay creatively inspired. Look, it's a lot to expect one person to do on their own. You should be able to grow a thriving photography business without losing sleep, time, or all your friends over it. Having empowered over 500,000 photographers worldwide to make money doing what they love, the Unscripted app for photographers takes the struggle out of what you do. Offering the world's most extensive collection of poses and prompts, lawyer-approved contracts, digital invoices, client questionnaires, beautifully designed galleries, and so much more, your only regret will be not getting on board earlier. Stop feeling disorganized, insecure, and awkward. Book your ideal clients and grow a thriving photography business today. Search Unscripted in your app store now and get $20 off lifetime access with our code UNSCRIPTEDPODCAST.
Wow. And it's just like so public as well. Like, I feel like, you know, even just exposing your relationship to the public is like one form of kind of pressure. And then on top of that, I can only imagine, it's just for you guys to have held it together for that long is such a feat.
Yeah. I say this to her now. And like, you know, even though we're not together anymore, I say to her, listen, you know, there's not many people who would survive that and protect the children in the midst of it all and protect, because it was a lot. And it got to the point where it's like, we cannot do this anymore. Like, we cannot do this. And yeah, the marriage broke down. I went my way, she went hers. Fire and Ice, I kept the name. She started, but her old name again, Jacqueline Di Roma, you know, give her a shout out. She's an incredible photographer, an amazing woman, and the best mom to my children. And yeah, I miss her. I miss the marriage. I miss everything about our relationship. But yeah, man, this podcast emotional. Is this life?
I appreciate you sort of being so honest. I feel like it's a lot to like sort of have this very public profile and, you know, to still be enduring all these personal things. But I can also see how much all of your personal challenges and lessons, and God knows you've had a lot, like have really served you. And yeah, it just speaks to your resilience and your capacity for growth. And I feel like that's like a really valuable thing to share with people.
Yeah. For anyone listening out there who's going through the tough times, just keep going. Just keep going. I promise you it'll get better. Keep going. And that's what I did. And I woke up every day and I kept on going. And, you know, even though there's parts I would change, I don't regret meeting her. I don't regret any part of my, you know, any part of my life for that, because it has. We learn through adversity, right? We learn through the tough times. And now I'm in a position where I'll be able to offer a better version of myself to the next person I'm with. Even though I'm not looking, I do not want anyone around me right now. Please stay away, because I'm not good for anyone right now. Okay. I'm still. So, yeah, I'm like, just keep going. If you're going through it, you know, if you want to chat with me about it, I've been through a lot, man. The prison, I've been through, you know, marriage problems, the children, you know, business, anything. If you're out there and you want to reach out or you're struggling, just send me a DM on like Instagram or something and I'll be there for you.
That's super generous. I mean, I don't know if you know of Nick Cave, but he's this musician, he's Australian, and he's been through a lot. Like he's lost like two of his kids, and he has this really amazing book about like grief and hope. And he kind of talks about how like, you know, some people have certain responses to this kind of stuff where they just go further inward and they kind of like calcify. But what his response has been is just to sort of like, just, yeah, like express more love and like be more in the moment. And, you know, it sounds quite cliche talking about it now, but there really is a kind of magic to that capacity to like continue to like tap into your resilience, even though you're not feeling like the world is on your side.
Yeah. And I feel like even though I've been to prison, what I've done in the last 5 years with this photography business is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I feel like without me going through as much as I went through growing up, and, you know, the problems I faced and the big problems like jail was obviously the big one, right? I was taken away from life for almost 3 years. And I feel like I wouldn't have been able to handle this past 5 years if I didn't, you know, create that resilience or just that persistence to just keep going. Just keep going. Wake up every day and just get at it.
Is that your sort of like sort of technique or like strategy to sort of keep your mental health in check, is just sort of like continue to like move forward and engage? Or do you have any other ones that you sort of draw upon that you'd be willing to share?
I feel like it's not something I think about. It's just something I do. So I just wake up and just, right, what's next? Just what's next? And what we talked about earlier of like nothing really phases me anymore. Something really huge could happen. And I'll give a really personal example, actually. My dad actually got sick 2-3 months ago, really sick. Like, and I walked into the hospital and all of my family there, one of my family members said to me, he's not going to come out of this. And I'm like, with that, of course he isn't, with that attitude. Everyone, what is going on here? Why are we all so negative? Like, how is he going to fight with all of you with this aura, this like negativity, giving up? Like, you better not walk in that room with my dad there and have this negativity. And I walk in there like, right, what's going on? You know, and this like positive attitude is just part of me.
Yeah.
And he's home now. He's home. I mean, obviously not out of, but he's a fighter, you know? And I feel like I get that from him myself. Like, nothing phases us. We've done it.
And it's also like knowing that other people around you believe that you can do it too. You know, like that example that you just gave, where it's like, if you present that confidence in his capacity, then I feel like that gives people access to their own sort of, their own strength sometimes.
Yeah. A lot of people live in bubbles. Like, and I don't mean that in an offensive way. A lot of people live in bubbles, right? And I was one of these people before I kind of explored the world and, you know, I put myself out there. Like, I was living in such a small bubble. My world was tiny. I thought tiny problems were big problems. And now it's like, why are you even worried about that? That's nothing. Like, it's not, you know, how are you going to let that stop you? It's nothing, and nothing really. Once you go out there and explore the big wild world and you explore different cultures, you meet new people and you talk to different, you see their stories. Like, there's way worse people in this world right now than what you were going through. I guarantee you that. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, it is hard to remember, though. You know, when you're going through something, it feels very real. It's really hard to keep it in perspective. Like, you can know that intellectually, but you're still just like,
yeah, I'm trying to make it sound so
good. What I'm going through is the biggest thing I'm going
through. I'm just like, yeah, this is easy. Just wake up. Yeah, it's fine. Just whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like,
that attitude is like, I don't even think about it. I just... If something happens, yeah, all right, let's deal with it. You know, let's deal with it. Let's face it front on. Let's not hide from that.
What role has like photography played in helping you find your sense of purpose and direction?
Do you know, wedding photography is like, I lose sleep over photography and over ideas and the creative mind. I'm a very creative person. And wedding photography was the outlet for me to express my creativity and to put myself in situations where I'm forced to create. But also, wedding photography is something that it forces you to, like, for example, right, when you own a business, you can decide whether to open that shop or not on that day, depending on how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. If you have a wedding on a Saturday, you cannot just go, I'm not going anymore. I'm sick today. This is someone's life event, right? So that aspect of wedding photography really attracted me. The fact that if I commit to that, I have to go there. And then when I'm there, I have to create.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of forcing to put myself in a situation where I have to create. So I have to get better. I cannot just not turn up today or not just call, you know, have a lazy day. You have to. And then in order to, you know, the wedding's getting bigger and bigger, and eventually we're shooting celebrity weddings. Then you have to go, right, I've got to actually not just turn up today and create. I have to put in a lot of pre-production, a lot of planning, a lot of effort into when I turn up, how this is going to go perfectly.
Yeah. So
that's why I was so attracted to wedding photography. And now Fire and Ice has, basically Fire and Ice is like an umbrella company, right? There's like four or five companies underneath Fire and Ice, driven by what we've done in the wedding industry, such as the Fire and Ice commercial, which is really excelling at the moment. We just done, I mean, but the third shoot was like the promo for one of the new Nikon products that they sent us from Tokyo. So it's like the 60, 70 crew cast shoot.
Wow.
That we've done. And it's huge. Like Fire and Ice commercial is really, really excelling right now. And that is different. That's driven by the weddings and what we've done in the weddings. All of our clients come from what we've done in the weddings, whether it be, you know, past clients we've worked with or somebody seeing the potential, etc. So Fire and Ice, I'll give you a breakdown of the business model. For those out there willing to like be crazy enough to go at something as big as, you know, as what we've done here, Fire and Ice is an umbrella. And then all of the employees, there's 14 full-time staff, all of the employees over the past 5 years, I've kind of looked for people in there that I want to create a business with. So, because I always get asked, how are these photographers working for you? Why are they not going on doing it on themselves or going on their own? You know, now that they know what they're doing, this is one of the biggest struggles people face. One of the ways I've done that is by giving them incentive to stay. Fire and Ice is a big name, it's a big brand, it's global shooting, you know, on a global scale, we're shooting, it's very well known, not just locally, but around the world. And that platform, once you have that platform, you can then build other businesses underneath it. So all of my employees have kind of been like tested over the years to go through all of the rough in order to get to the smooth. And the people who can, who are resilient and people who I want a business with or partnership with, that's who I make a business with then. So I have multiple businesses, like a business with Josh, a business with Els, you know, business with Rebecca. I have multiple with Phil, multiple businesses underneath it with the people that's been working for Fire and Ice and the wedding side of it that I know I want to be a partner with those people. And that gives those incentive to stay because now they own 50% of another company.
Wow, such an interesting model and so clever.
So it's kind of, this is how I get around. I mean, obviously we pay well, we pay our staff well enough to want to stay just for that. And it takes away the headache of having to do the sales. We're having to do the, you know, if there's any client complaints and none of that, you don't have to do anything, no contracts, nothing. You're just a shooter. So that aspect of it, but then also, right, I potentially could have my name on something and grow it. And that's kind of driven by this, you know, brand and by someone like me who is very, very ambitious and, you know, every day waking up hard work every day, So yeah, that's kind of the business model.
It's like midnight where Christian is right now to all who are listening. So like, just like one testament to that. He's just never stops.
Yeah, maximum effort. That's literally what we live by here, is everything is above and beyond.
So in your work, it's like you use a lot of like cinematic techniques and studio lighting and like very intentional direction. Like your style is like quite considered and quite deliberate. And I was just curious about like, how did you discover this style? Was it something that sort of emerged when Fire and Ice sort of started as like a kind of collaborative, or was this something that you've always sort of been really interested in, that sort of specific like shaping light and like really kind of coming in with like almost a storyboard idea of like how it's going to look? Or because I know a lot of wedding photographers are very natural light, very candid, very sort of, I guess, dictated by whatever the light is on the day, but you're like, you create the light.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest aspects of our style, is the fact that we don't just wait happen and shoot it. We make it happen and then shoot it. And there's, since day one, we've had three different types of photos that we're going to capture on a wedding day. And we have our own internal names for them. The names are candid. Obviously everyone knows what that is. It's just a moment that happens, you know, without any direction or any control or inavailable light. Then you have candid banger, and then you have banger. So there's three different types of photos that my company goes at, right? So in order to create not just these incredible photos, but in order to document a wedding, because at the end of the day, it is about memories. And most of the time, the wedding is that you can't touch it, right? 90% of the wedding is a wedding. You can't get involved, kind of stop the ceremony, you know, set up a couple of aperture 600s or something. But it's not a TV set. It's an actual. So how do we kind of stand out in this saturated market? And it's by doing those three photos. So the candid kind of tells a story. That's the client happy. That's the baseline. That is the standard, right, of what most people would turn up and document a wedding. Then you have the candid banger, which is kind of like, these are the best ones. If you can do these ones, they are the best ones. A candid banger is basically, if you look at maybe a first look, so you do have control over the light, you have control over the location, the background, but what happens in that frame is natural, is a candid moment. Those are the best ones. And you can actually create these. So for example, if you're in bride prep and there's a little flower girl there and the mum's having the makeup done. Now I've gone up there and I've set some lights up and I've made her look beautiful. I've got the camera ready. I've got the team ready. And then I say to the little flower girl, hey, run up to mummy and just give her a hug and tell her she looks beautiful. And then she runs up to mum, gives it a hug. And now the mum's expression, you've created that. That's a candid banger. So we've made that happen. And then we filmed it, you know, and she's going to cherish that moment forever. Even though like you had to nudge the little girl sort of thing, you kind of made that happen and you've done it in the best light, the best focal length, the best background, you know, the best everything, the audio spot on, the full works. Those are the best ones.
Yeah.
And then you have a banger, which is essentially what fine art photography is, which means basically everything in that frame is under the artist's control. You know, the expression, the pose, the light, the focal length, the movement, any part of that, what happens in there is under my control. Those are the bangers. And that is the only ones we post. That's the only ones you'll see on our Instagram or on our socials, because that's the client we want to attract, is the people that want to give us time to do those bangers, because I do not want to turn up to a wedding and just document it naturally. It does not do anything for me. I need to create. I need to create. So if the client is not going to give me the time to create, I don't want to do the wedding. I don't want to just turn up and shoot candid. Even though sometimes we have done this in order to take the money, we have a business, we don't post that because we don't want to attract the people who just want to document it from the back. We're very involved in a wedding day. And if you go to our socials, you'll see like we're setting up 6x6 scrims, aperture 600s, and it's like teams of people. There's teams, there's a lighting team there. There's an audio tech there. There's like, when we turn up to a wedding, it's like a production.
Cool.
You have to do all three, because you could probably get away with missing the candid bangers and just do, you know, candid and just bangers. But you throw the candid bangers in there and you've got a banging gallery.
Yeah, totally. I feel like that was kind of another question that I wanted to ask you, was just like, how do you get clients that like let you do all of this stuff, like that let you arrive with, and it's, I feel like you answered it. It's just like you post what you want to book, and
yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But you also also lose clients that way. You have to be careful, because you will lose clients, because a lot of people won't want to do that, but that's fine. That's fine, because I don't want to do it either.
Yeah.
Not, if let's not do that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You find someone who wants to do the candy style, and they will probably, you know, put more time and effort into it because they're really passionate about that. But yeah, it's kind of got to the point where it's gone so big so fast because of that aspect. And also because of the two words I said earlier, and you'll see this all of the time within my companies, the two words we use is maximum effort. And we turn 4-hour shoot into 5-day shoot sometimes, because that's how we go, how we roll. It's literally how what we do. There's a YouTube video actually of our team shooting an elopement in the Isle of Skye in Scotland. And they booked us for 4 hours. And we turned the shoot into 4.5, maybe 5 days with 6 people on there and full BTS and a crew and everything. And it, obviously it costs money, but the amount of bookings that we had because of that, and it goes to show, it shows you, if you watch that video, it shows you what Fire and Ice is all about. It's like from start to finish. It shows you the hard times. There's people falling over, farting. It's like real. It's the real how we do things, right? So it's a very interesting watch. And basically it started, it's the pilot to the next move that we are making, which is a bold move, which is we're going to try and hit reality TV. So we're going to, you know, I say like Netflix or the big ones or Prime, all of these, we are filming episodes of Fire and Ice shooting weddings around the world. And it's all, and there's a crew that follows us around and it shoots, and we're making, you know, very real episodes, kind of like Say Yes to the Dress, you know, the American Pawn Shop, American County Choppers, all of these reality TVs like Miami Inc., but for wedding videography and wedding photography team. It's never been done before. So the first episode we released in January 28th, actually. It's going to be quite...
What's it called?
Fire and Ice, the reality show.
Fire and Ice, the reality show. That's what it's called?
It's not called that, but we haven't got to that point yet. But we're making the first episodes based upon what we shot last year. But the next move is to intentionally put these together. So there'll be a structure for every episode. It essentially starts with the client walks into our offices, and this is cameras up everywhere, and we go through the consultation phase, and then we go through the planning phase. So for example, if it's a Caribbean kind of styled wedding, say if it's a wedding in Jamaica, right, and we speak to the client and we do the consultation, then the team goes and we kind of like dress up maybe, or you know, do something entertaining. So there's an entertaining value. So when we're planning the wedding, we like, you know, we're maybe learning salsa dances or something, so we can do them on the day. It's a really purposeful kind of scripted plot. But, and then it shows the reality, and then it shows the final product. So it's, everything, that's kind of the idea for it.
Jesus. Okay. So you've like, you've gone from like when you finished high school, it was like straight into engineering, like you got like insane grades, and then like you went to jail for a little while, and then you got into photography, and then like videography, and now it's kind of like cinematography and like reality TV, and then like also education, and like five kids in tow. Is that a pretty accurate summary of...
Yes, it is. What am I doing? I'm crazy. Someone tell me to stop.
You're crazy. Stop. But don't stop. It's exciting.
The idea is kind of like, you know, the commercial business was launched a few months back and it's doing really well. And we're like, how can we make this commercial company grow faster? So it's kind of like an inception that Fire and Ice commercial is going to shoot Fire and Ice weddings on the reality TV show. So it grows that business and this business. So that's kind of like the idea.
So it's like you're doing your own PR, kind of.
Yeah, well, we got to keep it internal. You know, we got to keep everything in. We can't give like access to us, you know, to somebody else who could potentially kill us off. Nah, I'm joking. We're very good people.
Wow, a reality TV show. That would be so interesting. I feel like, okay, so how do you choose your clients? Like, do your clients come on knowing, obviously, you have to tell them that they're going to be on a reality. Also, like, I'm just picturing, like, you're a whole crew shooting the wedding, and then there's, like, another crew shooting the, shooting the wedding.
Yeah,
it's like Inception. Yes. Like, it's, like, so many layers in the Matrix.
It is, and you have to have, obviously, clients on board with it, but so, obviously...
Are you giving them a discount? Like, how do they...
No.
They want that.
Yeah. Some people, like, I mean, we have 12 people, right? We look 12 part episodes. We've chosen... We shoot 140 weddings a year, so choosing 12 people is not that difficult out of it. They kind of choose us by being so open. But what we do is show them the Sky video. If we show them the Isle of Skye video of the BTS, they see all of the works of it, and it's like more footage for them. They see how it was all created. So, it's not a hard sell at all. To go even one step further than that, on our education platform right now, we're actually doing a come shoot a wedding with me kind of educational student.
Oh.
people can just go on to the fireandice.vip site and they can choose a wedding, come to the wedding with us, be part of the reality TV show, learn how to shoot a wedding, keep the photos for their portfolio, and have a ball. How's
that? Wow. Do you choose people based on like their like reality TV personality? Like,
let's interview everyone and make sure they're good on camera. Now, yeah. They don't have to go on there. But it's kind of like a nice thing to give back to students. I wish I had it when I was younger, when I was early on in my days, you know, because like I said, I went, even my sister's wedding, I was kind of like nervous to ask the photographer, can I come and shoot, you know, watching other photographers. But people want to get into destination weddings. And we have like, I think we're up to like 18 destination weddings next year, all over the world, 18 different countries. So if they want to build a portfolio, just come along. I don't give a shit. Just shoot, take what you want, man. Build your business, go thrive. I'm not in this business to be your competition. There's plenty of work out there. And, you know, I'm so happy to see other people do well. And that's what I want to achieve.
It sounds like that's what you are achieving. Thank you so much for being on the show. I just want to ask you one last question of, is there anything else you want to talk about that I haven't asked you yet?
Oh, I feel like there's something now. Is there something I missed? No, I don't know. No, not really. I mean, just like the educational platform, if people want to actually learn and see the ins and outs and, you know, have one-to-one mentoring with me. If it's to do with personal stuff or like if you're struggling, don't even, you know, bother going on there and booking a one-to-one consultation. Just message me and we'll have a chat. But if you want to learn about photography business, you know, learn from someone who's been through it all, I can help and I can save you a lot of money by, you know, telling you all the mistakes that I've made or you're probably going to make without someone, you know, guiding you.
What is the biggest mistake that you've made?
Ooh, that's a juicy one. In regards to photography or life in general?
Oh, let's say photography. Let's narrow it down.
Okay. This is kind of a two-part answer. The biggest mistake I ever did was adding video into my company. But it's also now one of the best things I ever done. So I seriously, for a while, I regretted adding video. It's so much more work, more money. It's not as profitable. If you're just looking to make money, don't even consider it.
Yeah, but it's crazy how much work it adds.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And the thing is, it's like people look at it and they think it should be cheaper than photography and it should be five times more expensive.
Yeah.
The amount of equipment we take. I did a photo only wedding 3 days ago. And like, I'm rocking up and it's so rare we do these now. I'm usually shooting every wedding is like photo video teams, like 6 to 8 people on the wedding shoot. So we're rocking up all of this gear. And I went and shot a photo only wedding for the first time in probably about 6-7 months on Saturday. And I'm like, where the freaking hell is all the gear? I'm just there with a Pally case and a flash. And I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah. You're like, I feel like I've forgotten something.
Yeah. I felt like I didn't earn my, you know, I wasn't doing enough to earn my money. I was like, what is going on? Video is so much more, so much more. So that's one of my biggest regrets. I would love to like know what would have happened if me and Jackie just went down the road of just be like cool ass photographers, travel and just do this simple thing and create and enjoy our jobs and spend time on our relationship. Or should we just add video in there, 14 staff members, you know, go gray by the time I'm 35. It's like 5 kids in there as well. Actually, one hardest things I've ever done is managing people. That's apart from jail and apart from marriage and business, the third worst hardest thing I've ever done is managing staff. That is so difficult. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's not something that anyone teaches you how to do. It's like you just kind of get to a certain point in your business and a certain point of success and you're expected to have staff, but you don't really have any training on like how to manage different personalities, how to get the most out of people, exactly. How to encourage people, how to make people feel heard and seen. And, you know, it's
oh my God. It's so honestly so difficult. And every individual, like you said, personality, you have to manage it different. You can say something to somebody and somebody else might get offended.
Yeah.
You have to cut that out. But like it kind of naturally dwindles down in the end to the people who should be there and the people you know, that deserve to be at the table with you and you deserve to be at the table with. So it kind of naturally happened, just a lot of stress in between.
Yeah, but it also sounds like you've done it so well, like the way that you've made everyone like business partners and then there's like these sort of incentives for being invested. I feel like you've really managed to like still have a big team, but have people be in it as if it's their own business,
We have our 9-to-5ers. I think every business has to have your 9-to-5ers. Otherwise, everyone cannot be elite. It'll be a lot of clashing heads.
Too many chefs in the kitchen.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, I've kind of figured it out now. And if anyone does want to, you know, chat about teams within this, because it is a massive trend, teams during weddings right now.
Yes.
You know, you see
bride teams.
Yeah. So if, you know, if you want to chat on how to get started, employees and how to manage this, and even the way to pay them, I did it all wrong. You know, I was paying people by shoot at the beginning, paying per shoot, and it almost crippled my business. And now everyone is salary based and it doesn't matter how many shoots you do. And, you know, there's dedicated people to this. We've kind of got it figured out now, kind of.
Nice. Nice.
So, yeah, if you want to chat about that, let me know. And yeah, we can definitely, because it is hard.
Thank you so much for your time, Christian. Thank you for your generosity and for staying up into the wee hours with me. It's so nice.
I'm going to edit now.
Fuck no. When do you sleep?
I'm just joking.
Oh, good.
I don't edit.
Good. Oh, you're like, I don't do that anymore.
Nah, I do. I do sometimes, only like the preview.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed the chat.
And there you have it. That, my friends, is the story of Christian O'Reilly, who went from facing a major setback to finding new strengths and perspectives in his photography and life. His journey is a testament to his resilience, and it shows us that even the most challenging moments can lead to unexpected lessons. So if you're facing a setback in your own life, hang in there. Through adversity, we grow. This has been the Unscripted Podcast for Photographers, a show dedicated to helping photographers thrive. If you enjoyed this episode, why not subscribe or share it with your friends? We're taking a short break over the holidays, but we'll see you again in the new year for more inspiring conversations with your favorite photographers. See you next time. This podcast was created on the unceded land of the Bundjalung people, and we pay our respects to elders past, emerging, and present.